The first thing that I'll tell you that has helped me the single most is meditation. So I got very lucky that I had a guy named Tom Knowles, who was one of the Maharishi's disciples. It's interesting because I felt it this week in a certain circumstance. And And it's funny because the release is so easy.
Yeah.
And yet it feels so difficult. So the first thing that I'll tell you that has helped me the single most is meditation. So I got very lucky that I had a guy named Tom Knowles, who was one of the Maharishi's disciples. There was 11 of them. He lived like in with Maharishi, like total silence, you know, like doing the whole thing.
Yeah, his mind control
and
is great.
His stories are insane. So he apparently, there was, I think, 11 of them that were direct. And they all had their names that were, you know, whatever he gave them. And they would have, Maharishi wouldn't talk and they'd meditate and meditate. And he said when the Maharishi passed, before he passed, they were in the middle of a meditation and he looked at each one of them. There's nothing wrong. He didn't look sick. He's like, his name was Tom, but T-H-O-M. You know, I forgot what it was. Your peace is like no other, you know, whatever the other girl's name was. Your inner wisdom is like, and said to each one of them, which he never talked, like, this is something, and then he said, and now it's time for me to go, and he just closed his eyes and died. And I got very lucky, someone introduced me to him, and I started when I was in my 20s with meditation.
The power of meditation?
Yeah, transcendental meditation, and I then went into an advanced course and a more advanced course.
What about for people that are just like, they're watching us now, talking about it, the simple form of meditation, maybe 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, something that they can just ease into.
Here's the interesting thing. At the time, I thought, like, oh, it's because I learned all this advanced meditation. No, actually, because I went sometimes years without using it, and then back in, like, I do it 10 times a day now, probably. But what I kind of live in a meditation. What I realized is it wasn't the advanced stuff. So my son, my 8-year-old, has, you know, he doesn't really know it, but he has anxiety. And, like somewhat diagnosed anxiety. And so I know how to deal with it, right? I've actually taught him to meditate and it works for him. And it's a very simple, imagine an 8-year-old trying to teach them, like you're gonna teach your brain not to think about something. You can't tell them that.
No.
Like, so he has fears. And I literally taught him, I gave him a mantra. And what you realize at the point of a mantra, once you know, you think you're getting some magical thing that he's bringing down from, no. All a mantra is a noise, a sound, or a word that doesn't have any meaning to you. So it doesn't bring up any feelings, emotions, or thoughts.
Okay.
So when you think, for people who have been given a mantra, you're like, oh shit, I thought it was some magic word. It's the sound itself had no affiliation to you. And that's why mantras were created the way they were, because they're not part of any language.
Right.
So when you say it, it doesn't make you think of something. Like if I say a word to you, if I say ball, you're thinking about something. If I say car, you're thinking about something. You know, even if I say, like, you know, I don't know, say the word shriek, you're thinking about something. But if I say the word, you know, shram, you have anything? If I say shram, or
I don't even know what shram is.
Right. So right. Now say shram 10 times in your head. Yeah. What are you thinking about?
I don't know. I don't know what it's from.
That's meditation. Yeah. You're not thinking about anything.
Right.
So what meditation is, and this is, I've done a lot of studying on it, is that it's taking your brain and putting it into a state that's similar to REM sleep, which is you only really get less than an hour of REM of light, right? And so getting into REM is the most calming thing you can do for your brain.
It helps. It brings down your stress. It brings down your anxiety. You actually can lose weight if you can get into like a deep sleep every night.
Yep.
It does a lot
of, and deep and REM are different too.
Right.
Like REM has a very specific brainwave pattern. So the largest study in history they did on meditation was actually done by, I forgot the insurance company. You'll love this story. So it was like, I don't know at the time, Anthem or Blue Cross or Blue Shield. And they did a 30-year or 20-year study on meditation. And they took like, my numbers are going to be off because I read this in, you know, 20 years ago, but they took like 5,000 people on the core group and 5,000 on the study group, you know, who exactly from the same, you know, places and peers and cohorts, and said, don't change anything in your life. Taught these 5,000 how to meditate. 20 minutes a day, check the box that you've done it, meditate, TM, Transcendental Meditation. These 5,000, don't do anything different. Just do your own thing. It's the only thing. And we're going to follow you over, I think it was a 10-year period. And they found that the 5,000 people who were meditating, the amount of illness was like 95% removed, like less than the amount of illness in general, whether it was serious illnesses like, you know, cancers and heart disease and, you know, all the way to just like most basic. And it was so bad, they shut the study down. And you know why they shut the study down? So one of the things that they were looking at was, if do we teach people to meditate, as a health insurance company, it'll save us money. The 5,000 people group, something like 70% of them canceled their health insurance because they never went to the doctor.
Right.
They're like, oh shit, we can't teach people to meditate. They're not going to have health insurance anymore. And so it's that powerful. And all it is, so for my 8-year-old, I just gave him a word that I knew had no meaning to him, and I helped him say it, and then you help him say it quietly, more quietly, and then I just say, now close your eyes and just repeat it in your head and focus on the word. And here's the best explanation I ever heard. And I swear to God, this little simple thing gives as much to me as the most advanced 10, 15 year studies I did in meditation, into the deepest, like, here's 27 sentences and words and focusing on the right chakras, which I have all of those things. This is just as good, which is you're saying the word and you're repeating in your head and you're closing your eyes, be in a comfortable position. And you're gonna have thoughts that come in, right? And they're gonna consume you. It's just natural. And the way that you think about it is, you're at an event and you're talking to someone you wanna talk to. And your friends are inevitably gonna walk up and say hi. And you're gonna start getting distracted. And you're gonna say hi nicely and start talking to them, and then you're gonna realize, but I need to talk to this person. And you're gonna say, it was nice to see you, and go back to talking to that person. And that's how you treat the thoughts that come in. And remember your mantra, because you start forgetting the mantra and you drift off because you're kind of asleep, but kind of not. And you just go back to that, like repeating that word. And I swear that simple thing is more powerful than anything I've ever done for anxiety. Now, that being said, you know, it's funny because we had Rabbi Leader on the show, who's, you know, a very, very, very well-respected rabbi. Right. He just came out of the blue, and he's like, I realized when I was like 50 that I had anxiety, and got on, said it right in the podcast, got on SSRIs. He said, I've got on Zoloft. He said, changed my life. The rabbi actually said, I think they should put Zoloft in the water. He literally said that. And he's like, I didn't realize how much anxiety I was dealing with and what I was doing, because these things he's done has been amazing. I mean, he built the largest Jewish center in Los Angeles. It was, I think, $250 million he raised to build the Jewish center. It's, what can I say, center? It's like 3 blocks in downtown LA. It's like, I mean, it's serious. And 3 schools and the pressure too, because he's dealing with the most, I mean, literally I'd say arguably some of the most powerful people in Los Angeles are in his congregation. And coming to him, right, for advice daily. So he's like, I put everything into work. And then one day I realized, like, I was hiding this underlying anxiety.
Nobody's exempt at all. And then, like, in the sports space, one of the terms that we've kind of created was permission to pause. And like, so, you know, everyone has permission to pause in their life. And the reference point that I kind of used was any time in a game when it wasn't going your way, the coach will call timeout. And so timeouts in our life is very critical. It's a very critical thing to learn how to call timeout. So permission to pause gives each individual an opportunity to call their timeout. Now, that timeout could be 30 seconds. It could be a 1-minute timeout. It could be a 3-minute timeout. It could be an 8-hour timeout. It depends on what that person needs. And so when we start to work with athletes, I start to teach them about permission to pause. So, like, let's take an after the game type of interview by reporters. When you ask a question, you can ask them to repeat the question and you can take permission to pause. Because a lot of times when you're in a fighter mode, things can be said that, you know, that you don't want to say, but even dealing with anxiety in the game. So imagine we're playing a full game, game seven, I get fouled, 10 seconds on the clock, we're down one, I get three shots, right?
Talk about pressure. Talk about,
like this is.
I mean, but that's real life. That's like anxiety. The whole world's watching.
So now you
it's
got
all
the
coming
whole,
down to it's just
right,
you.
It's coming down right now to you. You're in front of 19,000 fans. Live, it's on live television, so it's millions of people around the world watching, right? And you see the other coach calls a timeout.
Oh no! And he did that just to fuck with you.
There you go.
He was trying to trigger your anxiety.
So you see people, right, in the huddle. And I've always, this is something that I've studied. And I'm like, okay, what should happen in this situation? You got teammates walking by saying, hey, you're good.
Don't worry, you got
this. Don't worry, you got this.
Yeah.
And
calm down.
You got the athlete that's just sitting there. You can see him either go into a deep zone, or you can see that athlete that's taking those breaths of meditation. And he could be going into that rim of when he practiced.
Yep. Picturing the ball going in.
Picturing the ball go through.
Closing the eyes.
So one of my good friends, Dwayne, we had this conversation. Game six, I think, against the Mavericks championship.
Oh yeah, I remember the game.
The night before, he had his cousin in his ear saying everything you can think of. Just, wow. And he was shooting free throws. Bow, bow, bow. He gets fouled. Game is on the line. He went into this rim. He blocked out everything in the arena.
Yeah, everything goes quiet.
He only can hear his cousin.
Oh.
So he made the two free throws, but he was able to go into what everybody calls the zone.
Yeah, the zone. Because he entered the zone.
So going into the zone helps with anxiety for athletes.
It helps with anxiety for everyone.
For everyone.
But the zone is not just athletes. See, the court is such a good...
That was a good analogy.
Analogy of life.
Right.
Right, because everybody has their own court.
Everybody has their own court.
And that's where we live, in the court of life.
You
got to
say that again. Everybody
has
their own court.
Literally, court is the best representation of life. And we're all...
It's like
somewhere on the court.
In that situation.
We're either a coach, or we're a point guard, or we're a center, or we're, you know, a team owner, or, it's, you know.
Someone.
You're someone there in that, on that field. We're all there.
That's good.
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I'd say when you look at the game of life and the game of basketball, you know, in the game of basketball, you have extremes, right? People tend to make a lot more than the average person, but they're also judged a lot more than the average person.
They have to...
The pressure...
They have to fail.
Have to fail...
In front of...
The world.
Every time they touch the floor.
Right. Because as we talked about last time, they're gonna fail if they're the best 70% of the time.
If they're the best.
Right? So if you think about that, and when they fail, and you know... There's always the guy on court who can't even dribble a ball, but going, oh, you suck. And you're like, yeah, you come out here and fucking do it, right?
Right now.
Right? But everybody is a troll. I say it, but everybody, I didn't say everybody.
It's a lot of people. And what we call Monday morning
quarterbacks or coaches.
They want to coach after the game. So everyone can see it after the game.
Of course. And that's life, by the way. Business, it's so funny because I see a lot of businesses that didn't make it, that are great businesses, or like gone through a chapter 11 and then come out and everybody's like, oh, look, see, I knew that business could make it. Now it's super successful. And it's like, no, it was so easy to look at the business someone else built and see this part didn't work and stick another guy in there and just be like, I'm just going to cut out the part that didn't work because I got a reset. If you kept the guy in there who started it and told him to cut it out, the same thing would have happened. right? And so you could take that same, that so the high and low of basketball, you know, I'd say puts a more extreme on the excitement and puts a more extreme on the anxiety. So you have to learn to control that anxiety more, but you also have the extreme in that feeling of coming out and having the crowd cheering you on, right?
Right.
So I kind of feel like that's, for me, is the same in life. When I'm sitting at home and for some reason, some anxiety in life hits me and I don't want to leave the house. And I'm just like, oh, I want to leave the house. I don't want to return the phone call. I don't want to see the person, right? The moment that I actually just get one foot in front of the other, go to where I don't want to go, feel the fear and do it anyway, take mm-hmm. that step. I'm like 90% of my head, I'm not going to do it, but I'm just like taking step by step.
I love it. You know what we call that? So that way people, the viewers can get this, is that we call it Wi-Fi. Be where your feet are. And so when you are talking about, you're giving this illustration of like, you're a CEO. And when people see you, they may be like, wow, but you're also a human being. And so the title doesn't make you who you are. The human being does.
Yep.
And just being human for all of us is very normal. And so when you're Wi-Fi, when you're where your feet are.
Where your feet are. It's because that's how I live life. Is I think like, no, I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to take one foot and go forward. No, I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to take the second foot. And then the next thing, no, I'm not going to do it, but my foot's on the gas in the car taking me there. And then by the time I walk in the meeting, all of a sudden it's like, I feel better. It's my court.
Yep.
And now I'm running the meeting.
You're running.
And now the meeting's going great. And now I've forgotten I even had a problem with it. And I'm loving the meeting because I'm like, this is what I'm good at. I'm really good at doing whatever it is. I'm on set shooting, or I'm, you know, in a, closing a deal, or I'm, you know, whatever wow. it is. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I forgot I had anxiety, and I feel great because I'm really good at what I do. Mm.